now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. And that is something that I wholeheartedly believe in, that everybody not only has those wonderful things that they come into this world with, already gifted and graced with, but we also can find the courage within ourselves to go and to explore, to reclaim those things which always have belonged to us, but yet those things that we need to discover so that they can benefit the rest of humanity. So, very excited to be with you here today, every Friday at 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time. Each and every week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you'd like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, please visit the website www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, all one word. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Well, and if you would like to be part of the show, please call in 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your phone calls in the second half of the show today. And I'm also happy to report that these broadcasts are now podcasted. In case you want to go back and listen again, you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows as well. So I certainly invite you to do that. Well, as I always start out in these broadcasts, I start out with a question for you today. How is your heart? I hope it is well. I hope you are well. I hope that if you are struggling today, you will find rest and comfort and the peace that you need. Well, I don't know about you, but is anybody just, I know we're not through this yet, folks, but we've just come through an interesting week and a half, full of energy, full of opportunities, full of just high, high emotions. Did you survive it okay? Well, you know, to just think about it, just a short while ago, we had Halloween. That was on, what, Saturday. And on Halloween, we had a full moon, which was also a blue moon. And then on Saturday night, we turned our clocks back an hour, as if that didn't throw off anybody. And on top of all this, we had an election. Now, just when you think things were going to calm down, we have an 11-11 portal next week, which is believed to usher in tremendous energy and transformation. So if you feel a little out of sorts, all I can say is, well, if you haven't already fastened your seatbelt, you better do so today. This doesn't mean that we have no choice but to be caught up in the feeling of out of control, but that's actually just the opposite. We can be very intentional to be a very calming presence every day, not only in our lives, but the lives of others. Because when you think about it, when we're able to remain as a life-giving presence for others, we are engaged in the work of transmutation or alchemy. And perhaps this is what we learned early on in life. And this is today's subject, you know, alchemy. All that glitters could be gold, could not be, but we shall see. So how many of you out there in radio land, internet radio land, have ever had a chemistry set as a kid? Maybe you got it for a birthday present, or maybe you got it for Christmas, or maybe you just saved up enough money and you went and bought it yourself, or something. Okay, just a simple chemistry set. Nothing to brag about, but let's say the kit maybe had a little microscope to it, some glass slides that you can slide in there and look at various shapes or bugs or whatever. It had perhaps a glass beaker and a small flask. It came with tongs and an eyedropper. And I don't know about you, but I had lots of fun for hours just thinking up stuff to look under the microscope with. I remember one time when I'd accidentally had cut my finger and I squeezed a little bit of blood on one of the glass slides and I slid it under the microscope, and it was interesting. What I saw, my blood completely looked completely different than what I had imagined. And so it's always interesting to look at that. Or even if you have a piece of a leaf and you want to put it under a microscope, you get you just see all the indentations and just how the structure of the leaf is. It's really, really fascinating. And I also have to admit that I had fun mixing colors to see what I would get. And perhaps you had fun mixing colors too. Or perhaps with our chemistry set, we would often do simple experiments, such as adding vinegar to baking soda and then standing back and watching the fizz and the foam as the hydrogen ions in the vinegar react with the sodium and bicarbonate ions. And also, perhaps we had fun mixing, say, food coloring together to get a whole new color, such as mixing a little bit of red with a little bit of blue to get purple, or mixing a little bit of white with the black color to get gray. And this is fascinating to us. We felt like we were doing something very important. We were creating. We were having fun. We were exploring. We were experimenting. And as I said, if you had one of these chemistry sets, that was our entertainment. Something that I also learned early on was that whenever I got out the chemistry set, my mother always said, make sure you clean up after yourself, or at least put down some newspaper so whatever I was mixing together wouldn't spill over or, get on either the walls or the carpeting. So I said, early on, we learned the lesson that there's a change that occurs when two or more elements come together. And our modern day chemistry has enjoyed a long history of development that stretches back to ancient Egypt. And back then, they called it alchemy. And it's actually the process of taking something ordinary and turning it into something extraordinary, sometimes in a way that can't be explained. And the name alchemy is derived from the ancient art of transformation, in which these alchemists attempted to transform, let's say, lower base metals such as lead or copper, nickel, and zinc. And they attempted to transform these lower base metals into gold, because gold was seen and is still seen as the perfect metal, and everything else was less than perfect. And this was an idea that was very popular among Western alchemists. It was also, not only a very popular idea that these lower metals could be transmuted into gold, in order to do this, one needed the means of a substance known as the Philosopher's Stone. And the Philosopher's Stone is a legendary substance allegedly capable of turning inexpensive metals into gold. And it was sometimes believed to be used to discover, the elixir of life, useful for rejuvenation and possibly for achieving immortality. Well, the ancient Egyptians were not the only ones who practiced the art of alchemy. The people who lived during ancient Greece and China and India also had their own distinct form alchemy. But by the 8th century AD, the Arabians are believed to have brought alchemy to Spain, and then it spread to the rest of Europe. And eventually by the 16th century, alchemists in Europe had separated into two groups. There was one group who focused on the discovery of new compounds and their reactions, leading to what is now known as the science of chemistry. The second group continued to look at the more spiritual, metaphysical side of alchemy, continuing the search for immortality, that is, this elixir of life. And when we think about it, we who live in the 21st century, it's always something to consider that alchemy and transformation are occurring all around us every day. For example, here we are right smack dab in the season of autumn, and we look around us and we notice how the leaves are changing. And this too is alchemy. The change in the amount of sunlight affects the photosynthesis in the leaves by turning them green to, let's say, yellow or red or even blue or purple. And eventually, as the alchemy continues, those leaves turn brown, they die, they drop off the tree, they disintegrate, and they return to nourish the soil, all to repeat this process over and over again with every spring and summer, fall and winter. Well, if you tuned in last week, this was kind of the main emphasis in the story of the fall of Freddy the Leaf. I had mentioned it at the beginning of the show last week, and hopefully you had ordered your copy. It's just a great way to explain not only the change of seasons to children, but also other transformative aspects in our life, especially when a loved one dies. And all the elements of, say, fire and wind and water and earth all have a hand in alchemy in our lives. They all have an impact. They all have the creative power to transform. And when you think about it, even within our own digestive system, that whenever we eat something or we drink something, our gastric juices start breaking down the food so it can be absorbed as nutrients or fuel or energy for us to go about our everyday lives. And whatever is not absorbed, we know our bodies eventually will eliminate. Well, let's stay with the fire element here as we consider how alchemy ties into our psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual transformation. I mean, fire is indeed a major contributor in alchemy, and it burns wood and it changes chemical compositions from, let's say, a solid to a gas, which goes up in smoke and eventually mixes with dust and other things, only to return to us eventually in the form of clouds and rain to also nourish the soil. And while physical alchemy is concerned with altering and transforming the properties with matter, spiritual alchemy is concerned with freeing our spiritual selves, which there may be pockets in which these aspects are trapped within us by the unrefined parts of ourselves. And by this, I mean our fears that we hold in the body or our personal beliefs that no longer serve us, but yet we cling to because, well, we haven't really discovered something better to let go of those old beliefs to take on something new. Or maybe we also struggle with self-loathing. Or we just struggle in other areas, and we just continually hold that energy within us physically, and not to mention psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually. And spiritual alchemy is vastly more multifaceted. And perhaps the most fascinating aspect for me, anyway, of spiritual alchemy is its objective. To free us from, our core wounds or our core beliefs that no longer serve us, and some would say a soul loss and other self-destructive, let's say, personality and structures in order for us to live freely and unobstructed. I remember one time a friend of mine shared this analogy that he was trying to explain to me alchemy and the changes and so forth. I just wasn't quite getting the concept yet. And he picked up an acorn and he said, "What do you see?" As like, you know, all teachable moments in my life, you know, what are you looking at here? And I said, "Well, that's an acorn, of course." And he goes, "No, it is, but that's not the correct answer. The correct answer is I see a huge, sturdy, powerful oak tree in this acorn." And again, just switching things around and just getting a different perspective of, yeah. I mean, we could look at something and say, okay, this is literal. This is right in front of us. I can see it. I can, point to it and say, yes, this is true. I can feel it. It's hard. But to be able to see the potential in something, or let's start turning this in another direction now, that if we look at somebody else, do we see the potential in them? Do we see the potential for them to, let's say, let go of those things that no longer serve them anymore and take on something better? Or do we see the potential in them to really come into their own and their, the psychological, emotional, the physical, the spiritual components? That is quite exciting for, and when we're able to see the potential in others, we look past all the externals. We look past all the hurts and the pain. We look past all those things and we see something that can really come about in that person that is far more life-giving. So, many people, ask me from time to time, I would say, how do we change energy? How do we transmute this? How do we be involved in transformation? And that's a very important question. First of all, we have to learn that we cannot destroy energy. We can only change it. I mean, that's the law of physics. And just as we learn how to make purple, the color purple, from mixing red and blue, well, one of the things that I had learned from my Native American friends is the art of transformation by imagining a fire and sending those things that no longer serve me or sending those wounded parts of me into the fire with the direct intention of having the fire transform all that negative energy, all that pain, all that woundedness, and then using the analogy or the image of the fire, sending it up and out into the universe where it would be transformed and will come back to me or will come back to us as something more life-giving, something better. Okay? And we do. We need to replace or transform, the psychological, emotional, and spiritual energy into something that gives life to us and gives life to others. Let me give you another example here. We could easily pick up, negative emotional energy in the form of strong feelings of hate or jealousy or envy or ego or, whatever. But what do you do with it? Has anybody out there ever just walked into a store or walked into some other place and you just had a not so easy feeling that you just kind of walked through or just walked into just a lot of heaviness and there was just a lot of emotional pain or a lot of psychological pain? What do we do? Are we at the mercy of that then? And we just get, okay, I just need to get out of this. Or can we look for ways to transform that energy into something more life-giving? Okay. Well, imagine sitting with that fire in front of you or beside you, You know, if you're an avid camper and you'd love to have a little campfire, imagine that. And each day we can set our intention to send these negative, destructive emotions or psychological wounds, or even our spiritual wounds, at times of our loss of faith. Okay. We can send these destructive emotions, into the fire so that it will be transmuted out into the universe. But that's only half. I mean, we're not finished at this point, you know, because it's like explaining to kids that we live in an echo. So whatever we send out eventually returns to us in the same energy, unless it has been transformed, unless it's been changed. And this is kind of the general principle behind karma. You know, that whatever we, you know, whatever action or intention we have and an action that follows, we send it out, we're going to get that back. Maybe not immediately, but sooner rather than later. Or, you know, you can always use the phrase, we reap what we sow, or what goes around comes around, you know, etc. Anything that comes out from us is going to return to us in some form of energy. Okay. Some people actually take it one step further and say, well, this is simply the law of attraction. You know, whatever we're putting out there, we are going to attract back to us. So we have to transform negative energy that we experience from time to time in the form of any psychological or emotional or physical or and even spiritual wounds. Because we know we can hold stress and tension and even trauma in the body. We can also hold it in the mind. We can also hold it in the emotions, and we can also hold it in the soul. We can also hold it in our spirits, even right down to the cellular level. And this is the part that's truly fascinating, just how we are hardwired, how we are made, that cell memory holds all of our experiences, kind of like a blueprint, so that when something reminds us of an experience that was, let's say, beautiful and pleasant, wonderful and loving, or horrific and traumatic, we can be pulled back into those experiences at any given moment. And interestingly enough, it's actually the sense of smell, our olfactory senses, that can trigger memories like nothing else. Like, you know, even much faster than if we hear something or we see something or even a sense of touch. It's that sense of smell that can pull us back into experiences at any given moment. So to transform the negative energy we may be experiencing, we first are aware of what we may be holding on to or even unwilling to let go. So awareness is the key. So in our daily meditations, you know, take time to do a quick scan of your mental, your emotional, physical, and spiritual self. Intentionally send those things that drain you or disrupt your peace or trouble you deep down in your spirit, even if there are no words to express that level of pain or that level of disruption of your peace, that energy can still be sent into the fire to be transformed. Okay. And like I said, this is just the beginning. So all the while we are sending things into the fire to be transmuted and eventually out to the universe, we're also setting our intention to receive what's been transmuted to life-giving energy. So let's say that we have an experience that has just deeply, deeply disrupted our sense of personal security. And we set our intention in our meditation that, you know, we know where we hold that disruption, that chaos in ourselves. And, you know, we sit quietly. We don't judge it. We don't label it as good or bad or positive or negative, but we are intent. We set our intention, I should say, to sending it into the fire to be transmuted. And so it will go out. And we also ask that once it's been transformed, you know, God will send back to us that sense of peace, that sense of healing, that sense of wholeness, that sense of grace, and just a genuine love of ourselves, as, let's say, perhaps we imagined the loving arms of God just surrounding us and holding us, you know, during uncertain times. And the more we engage in this each day, the easier it becomes. And this is just something we do because, I mean, to be quite honestly, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. Nobody can carry wounds. We get very good at it at times, depending on the depth of our woundedness. But carrying the wounds of others, we just simply cannot do. It really would, you know, start to, for lack of a better phrase, break us down. Okay. But all the more reason why we need to, you know, take care of ourselves as well. So that's one more example here. Let's say that we are aware that we're filled with, well, let's pick an easy one. Let's say stress. Okay. Because we've been unintentionally picking up the negativity from others or deadlines or, dare I even say, from the election. Okay. You know what I'm talking about. Once we become aware of this, you know, we intentionally send that stress and anxiety into the fire to be transmuted, as well as ask that once it's been transmuted, it returns to us in the form of peace or perhaps staying neutral in our emotions and embrace love and patience for others who have yet to embrace their peace. We can do this in any given moment. You've heard me say on more than one occasion that there's a wonderful Franciscan teaching that in every situation, you look for the peace. And if you cannot find the peace, then you yourself become the peace for that situation. Or let's say if you cannot find the compassion, you become compassion for others. And this kind of alchemy is so needed in today's world, especially with the up-and-coming generations. And our greatest lessons that we can teach our youth, I'm convinced, is for them to see us behaving graciously and compassionately and loving towards each other. I mean, we don't even have to open our mouths, and we are teaching them very important lessons just by our perspectives and our intentions, which we all know, actions follow intentions. So they are watching us. They are also listening to us, but they are, more importantly, watching us. Okay? And we who are of the older generations need to make sure that the younger generations know that we see them, we hear them, we embrace their potential for kindness and strength, resiliency, and hope. They need to know that we see them as good husbands and wives. They need to know that we see them as good fathers and mothers. They need to know that we see the times in which they are compassionate, the times in which they make good decisions, the times in which they forgive. We need to make sure they know how valuable and hopeful they are. And this is also alchemy. It's a changing of energy into something more life-giving that we find ourselves in. And I often tell my students to never underestimate the power of their presence in any given situation. And this is what it means for us to be for this world that is a world that's generating anger and rage and contempt and strife, violence, uncertainty, and confusion. Healing is a deeply human process. And because it's a deep process, self-care is most important. And whenever I'm involved in clearing negative energy, either from the land that it has experienced trauma or helping others process their emotions or whatever is coming up in the moment, I know that afterwards I'm going to have to take it easy with myself, because depending on the intensity of the energy that is shifting, I usually have to sleep for a while in order for myself to continue processing out, you know, the change of energy. Call it taking a nap or whatever, but it's never just a nap. It's more like 4 hours, 5 hours. I mean, I go to bed, I go to sleep, because it is that draining at times. And in addition to taking it easy for a while, I also need to drink plenty of water, that liquid light, to replenish the energy that has been processed or has been released. So if you've ever experienced it, you know what I'm talking about. So for the rest of us, self-care is extremely, extremely vital. So rest when you are tired, work when you have the energy, and always continue to integrate your experiences, because these all form our narrative for others to hear. Honor yourself and honor the ones in whom you know who sit with you, and honor the ones who teach you, and honor the ones who pray for you, and honor the ones for support. Okay. For me, I play the flute, the Native American flute. That is what you're hearing. I play at the beginning, middle, and end of the show. It is recorded. I don't play every week, but you hear it. That is something that I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy. And I'm going to say more about how I got into playing the flute after our break. But I would really love to hear what's on your heart about this subject of alchemy. So again, if you would like to call in, the number is 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. And again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. And I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. Be back in 1 minute. Well, welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, just a word about next week's show. Here we are, November 13th. And as I said, Fridays at 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time. And I'll be talking, I'll give you the title, then I'll tell you what I'll be talking about here. How about that? The title of that show is, Will the Real Self Please Stand Up? Will the real self please stand up? Now, I will be talking about masks, and not just COVID masks, but more importantly, the masks that communicate our perceptions about ourselves in various social situations. And this was something that Dr. Carl Jung, had very strong views on, powerful teachings about the masks that we wear. And we all have different ones for work, for school or for family or friends. But I like to take it one step further and just ask, you know, what is the mask that we are most comfortable wearing most of the time? And what happens to those masks when we get home and we take them off? And are we comfortable enough to then take a long, hard look at ourselves? So that is next week. Tune in next Friday at noon Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Well, in the first half of the broadcast, I should say toward the end of the first half, talking about self-care and in the process of performing alchemy or shifting energy in people, whether we pray for them or we are working with them to remove energy or helping them process strong emotions. Just what do we do? How do we take care of ourselves? And I had also shared that depending on the intensity of the energy, I usually have to sleep for a while. Okay. And I think I had shared with this audience, there was a time that I was up in Canada and just outside of Ontario and Brantford, B-R-A-N-T-F-O-R-D. There we go. Brantford, Canada. And this is the site of a boarding school up there, which had the nickname of the mush hole. And because of the food was nothing but mush for indigenous children. And there have been a lot of reports of just inappropriateness that was going on, a lot of pain, physical pain, emotional pain, psychological pain, spiritual pain, and just widespread abuses and so forth. And this all came out, and certainly within the history of that institution up there. So I had felt called for the longest time to go up there and to clear the land, to pray for those who, let's say, are stuck in that traumatic energy and not knowing what to do with it. And so I felt okay, you know, going there. I got plenty of sleep the night before. I was there probably about 10 o'clock in the morning, crossed over into Canada, and just a short trip then on out. Then I was in the town of Brantford. And I went to the back of this boarding school, and there were some swings and so forth, but there was also this where the, not the forest, but the woods started. And just felt led to walk through the woods. And I had my drum with me, and I just gently drummed. And I also had my Native American flute. And this is what I use to just create a sense of peace in myself, as well as just a way to center myself before I do any like land clearing or soul clearing. And hung some prayer ties and just had a nice ceremony there. And I eventually had seen the indigenous children coming up from the land. And they were dressed in their uniforms, their school uniforms. And, you know, the girls had ribbons in their hairs and the boys had the short haircut and so forth. And they just came up out of the ground one by one and then they were whisked away to heaven. And so that was also the place in which the phrase Vaya con Dios came to me. And I also used that in my land and soul clearing, you know, go be with God. And so afterwards, I was there probably for a good 3 hours, 2-3 hours at least doing this. And when I was finished, I got in my car and headed back to Buffalo, which I was where I was staying. And here, the closer I got to the Canadian United States border, the more I just felt extremely tired and just recognized that this is a pattern in me that when there's just a lot of intense energy flying around and a lot of intense energy that has been cleared, there is a time when I have to be gentle with myself, so to speak. And so I didn't fall asleep at the wheel. I was able to make it back to Buffalo and went back to my hotel. And this was probably 3 o'clock in the afternoon or so. And I was drinking, you know, plenty of water along the way. And I just was tired. And so I said to myself, well, just lay down and just take a short nap. Well, 5 hours later, I woke up and it was nine-ish, going on 9 o'clock at night. And it just like, wow, you know, where did the time go? But also realizing that, you know, that rest is much needed because, you know, you're still processing the energy. And so, you know, the body, the physical body is also going to need to recover from that. And so this is the need to drink plenty of water and to rest. And so just simply honoring yourself and honoring the work that was been done and honoring the healing that has taken place. So all in all, you know, the Native American flute is something that I have really grown accustomed to. I really enjoy it. My teacher, he had, inadvertently started teaching me. I had my Native American flute because I was drawn to it years and years and years ago. And I had it with me one night, and my teacher, Benito Rael, he just said, here, let me try. And he played, and just beautiful, soothing sounds came from the flute. And when he was finished, he handed it back to me, and I, yeah, okay, I tried to make it sound like that. And it's just, it took many, many years that he's been playing mostly, you know, his life. But I really had enjoyed it and actually start collecting flutes. But that is one way in which I integrate my experiences in transmuting energy. It certainly works for me. I understand that we have somebody on the line. I'll take a call. Denise, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you, Dr. Hawk?
Let's see. It's kind of warm for the month of November, but I'll take it.
Listen, I just wanted to tell you that it's amazing how you use them. You know, it's almost like a metaphor using alchemy, where, you know, historically it was looked at, you know, you take something ordinary, you take these metals, and it was prohibited to try and turn them into gold. And so you take something that's so negative, you know, and alchemists, how they were looked upon, but yet you mm-hmm. transfer it into a positive where, you know, it sort of reminds me of like people who seek out yoga or seek out spiritual direction or just, you know, try and get a deeper relationship with themselves and with the world around them. And when that relationship is created in a sense that, is transformative in a positive way and liberating, and you just get so much enlightenment and your soul feels so much at peace, mm-hmm. you know, all that introspection. It's just amazing how I appreciate you putting a different spin on the word alchemy, but mm-hmm. Where it gives a, you know, where we can actually change our thoughts and our behaviors, like you just said, and it's very transformative, but positive and deeper, peaceful way when you reflect on it. So I just mm-hmm. wanted to call in and say thank you for the self-reflection. I've learned a lot today.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. And it is true, just as our caller Denise had shared, that, you know, this is why I started off the show by asking if anybody had a little chemistry set growing up, because that's how we first learned about alchemy. And we may not even be aware of the words, but, you know, we were involved in doing alchemy, you know, whether we were changing colors or watching, you know, baking soda foam because we added lemon juice or vinegar to it or something acidic. We were just having fun. But as we get older, we realize that alchemy takes on a much deeper deeper meaning. Okay. And also that we can take that also one step further and realize there's also spiritual alchemy, and we can be very intentional in transforming the negative energy and transmuting energy around us, the things that we are experiencing. Okay. So one of the, let's see, you've heard me, again, say this before. I feel like I repeat myself a lot, but one of my all-time favorite books is The Alchemist. And, you know, with Santiago, and he's the little shepherd boy, or the shepherd young man, we'll say. And, you know, it's something that he decides to go on a journey. And, you know, as with all journeys that involve irony, he is definitely caught up in, you know, well, I have to go to Egypt. I have to find my personal legend. And ironically, his journey brought him, or brings him, back to a place where he left. But he himself has been transformed along the way. And every time I read The Alchemist, I'm always reminded of my favorite quote from T.S. Eliot, where he says, "Let us not cease for exploration, and for all of our exploring will be for us to arrive at a place where we started, but we will know it for the first time." And that I like. That I like, because it just speaks transformation. And the prominent theme that runs through the book, The Alchemist, is that through the character Santiago, we realize that when you really want something to happen, when you set your intention, the whole universe conspires so that your wish, your heart's cry, your soul's cry comes true. And it certainly ties into the theme of alchemy today, or spiritual alchemy, because this is something that I truly believe in, that whenever we pay attention to what has been placed in our hearts, and we hear the cry of our soul, and we commit to it, the entire universe will make it happen. Our job is then to remain open and teachable in every situation in our lives. And when we do this, we also discover that we may have been already destined to embrace the cry of our soul all along. Okay? But the more attuned we are with the presence of God, the more we experience what is often referred to as the empathetic resonance. And that's the resonance of our soul coming into the resonance with the soul of God. And I like that. I love that connection. Just resonance just really just kind of sums it up. Because what we discover in being more fully connected to the soul of God then is that we are connected to things that bring us great joy, as well as being connected to the things that are disturbing and cause great suffering. But still, we embrace all, you know, to be that extension of God's presence and grace and healing for people who are looking and listening for God's presence, grace, and healing. In other words, you can say it another way, we embrace all things in order to create a space for transformation to occur in all persons. And as transformed people, we simply just cannot pick and choose when or where or why or how God will use us. Instead, you know, since we expect that God is more than able to understand and embrace all aspects of our lives, then should we not be willing to do the same for ourselves and others? You know, this is something that I often think about, that if we want to be used by God, and we pray, you know, God, please use me today, or, you know, if I ever find myself in a situation, please may I, you know, whatever our prayer is. But if we want to be used by God as healers, it really should not come as a surprise to us that God will place us in circumstances where there is pain and sorrow and suffering. Okay? If we want God to grant us, you know, the ancient wisdom. It should not come as any surprise that we will be placed in situations where people are maybe impulsive or lack insight. And if we want God to use us as peacemakers, then it also should be no surprise that God will place us in times of war and chaos and death and suffering. In fact, to really work for peace, we may just have to expose ourselves to non-peaceful situations. And the same is true that if we work to be more and more authentic, then we are going to find ourselves at times being, you know, around inauthentic people and situations. And the question for us then is, you know, when do we listen for God, and what are we actually hearing? Well, one of the stories that just really, shall I say, put the hook in me regarding playing the Native American flute is actually the story of the legend of the American Indian courting flute. And I'll just read this for you here, because it does speak a lot of transformation. It speaks a lot of this spiritual alchemy, and also gives you a glimpse as to why the flute is very special for me. He goes, "Suddenly, there was an entirely new sound, the kind neither he nor any other man had ever experienced before. It was a very mournful, sad, and ghost-like sound. In a way, it made this hunter who was out looking for his meal, it made him afraid. So he drew his robe tightly around him, and he reached for his bow to, and just made sure it was properly strung. And yet, the more he listened, on the other hand, this new sound was like a song, beautiful beyond imagination, full of love, hope, and yearning. And then, before he knew it, and with the night more than half gone, he was suddenly asleep. He dreamed that a bird called Wagnuka, the red-headed woodpecker, appeared to him, singing the strangely beautiful new song, saying, 'Follow me, and I will teach you.' When he awoke the next morning, he found a cedar tree. He broke off a branch, and working many hours, he hollowed it out delicately with a bowstring drill, just as he had seen Wagnuka do it in his vision with his beak. He whittled the branch into the shape of a bird with a long neck and an open beak. He painted the top of the bird's red head with washasha, the sacred vermilion color. And then he stopped, and he prayed. He burned the branch with incense of burning sage and sweetgrass, and he allowed the smoke to engulf it. He fingered the holes as he watched it done in his dream, all the while blowing softly into the end of his flute, because this is what he had made, the first flute, the very first flute. And all at once, there was this song, a ghost-like and beautiful beyond all words. And when the people heard this, they were astonished and joyful. And this is how the Native American flute came to be, thanks to the cedar branch, the woodpecker, the wind, and one young hunter who shot no elk that day for his meal, but he knew how to listen." Well, as I said, that's the Native American flute is very special to me because this is how I recharge. It's also what I use in shifting energy, and it speaks very clearly to me. It replenishes my soul. It feeds my soul, and I have seen it. What my teacher had shared with me how to play it, and not to worry about so much learning from a book or trying to learn songs or tunes, I should say, but just to play, and whatever comes out of the flute, its voice is going to be heard. And so something that's very soothing for many, many people. And I had seen this firsthand, just sitting with people who may be a little agitated or, you know, just nervous or what have you. And they hear the Native American flute and it just has this calming, soothing sound to it. And so in my own times of meditation, barely pray out loud, but I use the flute to pray. So I often say that I pray the flute and let that sound go out. And it was the flute that I had taken with me when I visited India, and I had played for the children, and who are in the ashram, who are going to school there. And I think I also had shared with you the story of how I had played for different grade levels. And I one day went to a particular area of the school in which they had children, different ages, who are mentally challenged. And they were very gracious. They flocked around this big white guy from America, and he had something in his hand, and they knew what a flute was. They just didn't know what a Native American flute was. And so they, just as I played a little bit, I had just heard a simple singing along or mimicking the voice of the flute from a little boy who was blind from birth. And it was just quite astonishing to the caregivers, the mothers there, the aunts, that this boy had never done this before. And just the voice of the flute or the spirit of the flute coming through that just had touched him and had brought him peace and joy. And I came away from that very humbled indeed, because, I went there to be a blessing to others. And I believe I came away with a greater blessing. I'm not going to say greater or less than for the kids, but I never imagined how it would come back to me. And that made the trip, just really worthwhile. And it just seemed to be the case that whenever I played and still play, the peace that it brings to people. And so I certainly use it as a means to take care of myself. So I encourage you to find what that self-care is for you. There are things that we all share. Like I said, if you need to take it easy, please do. If you need to take a nap, rest, work when you have the energy, or get caught up on projects or whatever, when you have the energy, always, always drink plenty of water. That really balances out our system and helps us to continue to process our emotions our energy as well. And certainly spend time each day, quiet, simple meditation with, and whatever comes up. And just sit with it. No labels, no judgment. No, like, oh, okay, I didn't really want to look at that tonight, or, well, okay, well, that's interesting that came up, whatever it is. And use the image of the fire. Let's say the fire is beside you, and send those, shall we say, the wounded parts of yourself or the unpleasant memories you have, send that into the fire. And ask God to receive that, to transform it, transform the energy of that, and return it to you as something that's going to be a great blessing, something that's going to be life-giving, something that will produce much joy in your heart, and as well as being a benefit for others, because ultimately that is what transformation is meant for. True, we are transformed, but our transformation is for the benefit of blessing somebody else and helping them transform. And the best thing that we can do is to see that potential in others to heal. Because a lot of times this world might talk a good game and say, well, you need to do this or need to do that, or this is good or this is bad, or whatever label they want to put on it. But rarely do I hear, you know, seeing the opportunities and the potential in people for, you know, being able to live the lives that they want to live, being able to, you know, have their soul get in touch with the soul of God, to be able to walk with God and talk with God and perhaps for the first time in their life understand that they are loved with an everlasting love, that they are loved with an everlasting peace, and that forgiveness is always available to them. Some people don't know that unless we first see that in themselves. We see that opportunity. We see that peace. We see the healing that can take place. We see the potential for them to go on and be great healers themselves and to reach out to others. That's, you know, also, it's hard sometimes because some people are afraid and they don't know if they could trust that. But still, I think we have an obligation to point it out to them. It's like, you know what, as you're talking, this is what I'm hearing. Or had you ever noticed that when, you know, and just to point that out to them, it may be something that they may be all too familiar with, you know, something that they certainly understand or have heard before. And it's just one more confirmation. And who knows, just the very simple part of our words is the kindness that they were looking for that day. And this is how powerful, you know, doing spiritual alchemy is, to transform energy, whatever the energy is, from something that's no longer life-giving or serves ourselves or serves others into something that is life-giving and healing and gracious. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I've enjoyed spending time with you here this afternoon and every Friday at 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Time. So until next week, I ask that you be safe, be kind to yourself, and let us also be kind to one another. Take care.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific Time on PBS Radio TV.